What advice does a white female, one with an African-American son and husband, have for them and us? We'll find out on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes, as always, those are my babies. Thanks for getting daddy started today. Mwah. Amy Lewis, a white female with an African-American son and husband, is with us today. And I'm curious, what's the advice that you give to your son to help him navigate today's America?
I think that we live in really difficult times, and they've gotten, in the more recent events, they've gotten much more difficult because people are now having the permission to do things that they were never able to do before. And by that, I mean the Trump candidacy and the Trump presidency has made it more possible for acts of violence to be okay. So for my son, one of the things that we've discussed most recently is making sure that the people around him have his back, to make sure that the people he surrounds himself with are aware, and particularly those people who don't look like him.
When you say never before, that doesn't seem right, because there was a time when you could do anything to black people and it wasn't a problem. So are you talking about the real recent?
I'm talking about the real recent. So my son's 22 years old. Mm-hmm. In his lifetime, certainly there have been horrors that mm-hmm. have occurred, and probably in his lifetime, but not in his experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now it's coming into his experience.
Where is he these days? What area?
So he's in Reston, Virginia.
Okay.
And has never really had to deal with direct acts of racism towards him, certainly indirect acts of racism. But the day after the election, he was walking down the street with two of his white colleagues and had two gentlemen, middle-aged, dressed pretty well, in a car drive by, unroll their window and decide to shout some really horrible things to him, rolled up their window and drove away.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Really.
Describe the America that exists today that you see as a caretaker of a young black male. So what do you see, what do you think he sees?
I think at 22, sometimes you don't see what people see when they're older. I'm terrified for him. And as a mama bear, I'm, you know, my head is much more on a swivel than it probably was 6 months ago or a year ago. I think that the America I see is one that I didn't want to admit to. I think I was, as much as I've been aware as a white woman having an African-American family, I was really blown apart when I saw what occurred during the election. So for me, those all pretense, all illusion was taken away on election day. And for my son, I think that our children have been shielded and sheltered in many ways that people in my generation have not, particularly if you're African-American.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the incident with your son and his friends. What did they say? Did he tell you?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. My son was less bothered by it than his two white colleagues. Okay. They were really apoplectic. And
oh,
I think...
Whoa.
Here all we right. go. Here we go.
Somebody get me the dictionary.
Context clues.
They were crazed.
Yes.
And, you know, white fragility, right? He spent more time worried about their reaction, or not necessarily worried about their reaction, but having to deal with their reaction, than he did his own.
Mm. Well.
Welcome to Frank Relationships. A show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and then via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get the show each week. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please give us a favorable iTunes rating, and please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super-duper co-host, Nancy Goldring.
Good morning, Frank.
The consummate generalist
indeed,
is in the house.
Indeed.
We're also joined by today's visiting co-host, Diallo Sumbri. Greetings, Diallo.
Greetings.
Who are you and what do you do when you're not co-hosting?
Who am I and what do I do when I'm not co-hosting? I am the chief pastor at the Temple of Core Engagement.
Okay.
And I'm often preaching to my congregation.
And where do you do that?
All Facebook? Over the world. Social media, reality, and everywhere.
Gotcha.
The Temple of Core Engagement.
Yes. Be careful now.
Don't get him talking too much.
Be careful.
Don't we have an obligation to the listeners to clarify exactly what that means?
Oh, boy.
We'll get into it.
All right.
Fantastic.
As is the case this week with Diallo, there's a visiting guest host, co-host chair available each week in the studio. If you're in the Washington, D.C. area or traveling into the D.C. area and want to join us in the studio on a given Thursday morning, email me at frank@franklove.com and let me know. Today's guest is a national board-certified acupuncturist and the president of Whole Health Associates, LLC. She brings over 20 years of experience in wellness and healthcare to her practice and works with patients from professional athletes to children, treating issues ranging from sports injuries to infertility and from migraines to cancer care. She's been featured on radio, TV, and in newspapers, including USA Today, and has served as the team acupuncturist for the Washington Redskins. But in addition to being an accomplished healthcare professional, she's also a mother and a wife of African-American males. She notes that over the years, she's witnessed fellow white Americans say things and act in ways that she believes to be reprehensible. And if for no other reason than she wants to see her families treated fairly, she's here to join us. So, if you, like me, want to know how a white female feels about the dynamic that says that black women voted for Clinton and white women voted for Trump, what dynamic she deals with as a half of an interracial marriage, and the cultural differences that exist between black and whites from a white female's perspective, then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks with my friend and a passionate fighter against bigotry, Mrs. Amy Lewis. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Before we get too deep in today's subject matter, I want to check in and see what's going on in the news. So, Amy and Diallo, please don't be bashful. We certainly want you to weigh in with whatever we come to. You got something, Nancy?
I don't.
Anybody? I always come prepared.
In the news?
Here we go.
What you want to talk about? All right, well.
As it relates to, but here's the thing, it's as it relates to relationships, correct?
Yes.
Oh, as it relates to relationships.
You gotta be able to tie it in.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. All right, but you've taken too long. So.
Yeah, way too long. I didn't come prepared.
All right. Not prepared. The emotional toll of entrepreneurship. There's a book called Killing It, An Entrepreneur's Guide to Keeping Your Head Without Losing Your Heart by Cheryl O'Loughlin, where she's talking about basically the downside of entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship is heralded as something great pretty much most of the time in America. And we don't really discuss the problems that come. I don't know if it's the case, but and I think it is, the suicide, the divorce. If you see divorce,
it happens. Bad.
It's traumatic,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. So the things that we struggle with, and ironically, Amy, you're an entrepreneur. Yes. Diallo, you're an entrepreneur.
Yep.
I'm an entrepreneur.
And I have been. So, yeah.
So, Jeff, would you call yourself an entrepreneur?
No.
Really?
Okay.
Just right. Like, no.
Interesting. Interesting.
So, I mean, what where do you guys weigh in on the problems with entrepreneurship and the problems that come with, in many ways, having to drive yourself, having to feel as though you're not letting things slip through the cracks or not letting your guard down and not missing out on money and just any not going home at 5 p.m. if that fits the bill?
I think there's an interesting dynamic that's happening right now that is an overlay on this, and that's women making more money. And so women are turning into entrepreneurs. We've had a downturn in the economy in 2008, and very often it was the man who lost a lot of his income. Mm-hmm. So the partner picked up the pace.
Yeah.
And you're seeing a dynamic shift because that's not been the traditional role in some communities. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing more strain on marriages as people and partnerships as people redefine their roles about breadwinners. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really significant piece of entrepreneurship.
This is actually right up the alley of core engagement, since
wow,
you asked about
nice.
Exactly okay. What core engagement is. So naturally, there are always ebb and flows. You know, for non-entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. you have ebb and flows. So if you're just in a career move and you're working a job, you might have to deal with a boss coming, a boss going, and having
sure.
to learn somebody new and how to function. There are some, I believe, universal spiritual laws that give credence to only speaking the positive,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So the negative happens, and it always happens. However, what you give the energy to is the positive. So there's a quote that say, the fire you fan the most burns the hottest.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have your downs. However, you look at your downs like, okay, this is part of the process. So when you talk about core engagement and you think about what the core does for the body, so if your center, whether it's your principles, your values, whether it's your relationship with your wife or your children, if you constantly, this is what I believe, this is what we preach in chapter 4, verse 10.
On the core engagement Bible, right?
That if you focus on your core, you know, it'll strengthen you, whether it's physically, whether it's spiritually, whether it's socially, whether it's business. So just that constant focus on the things that drive you, from waking up in the morning to saying, I'm blessed, you know, from always seeing the positive in everything you do. And I think that's what successful entrepreneurs do. They focus on the positive. And that doesn't mean you don't acknowledge the downs, but you really, really, really have to engage your core constantly and focus on the upside. So, you know, it's one of those things where you never lose. You either win or you learn. That's kind of
I like that.
How I look at it.
You either win or you learn. As I'm listening to you, I'm reflecting back on those times when something happened and in the moment it looked like a down.
Right.
And the further out you get from it, all of a sudden it slips back around to serve you mm-hmm. on some level. So it looked like the worst thing that could have happened in that moment, and it turned out that it was a blessing later
right.
on. And go ahead.
What did you used to do?
I actually ran a amusement vending company.
Okay.
Back in, what was that? The 80s? Was it the 80s?
Was this in relationship with Verna?
No.
Now, what type of
amusement vending
company?
And
you got to listen to it. Okay.
Okay, so you
Nancy's
know what?
Nancy's the only one that really gets this.
One week, he mentioned, I don't know who we were speaking to, but Frank mentioned, is this like the machine that comes over and grabs the toy, but you never get the toy, right? And I was just like, wow, is that a throwback to my vending days? Because that was one of the machines
okay.
that we had.
You were responsible for all of that.
Cheating
well,
them kids.
Here's the thing. I would come back and there was all the toys were gone. I always had to fill my machine. So I'm like, what's going on? What
she was
talking
in
about?
Baltimore. They broke the they broke the glass.
No. we had machines in Baltimore, Washington, and Virginia. Mm. I never even heard of Culpeper, Virginia until I was in vending.
And which machines were always empty?
Those were the ones we
all
put out.
All of those were
We put out the skill crane, and maybe once in a while we had another machine maybe we had acquired from somebody that we put out, but most of it was skill
crane. I don't think skill crane is an accurate description.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, I'm going to let it go.
I'm just glad you clarified what type of.
But you know what? It's funny that we're having the conversation because I often look back on that time and the times when you have to pay your employees before you get paid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got to get up and get out and get it every day. And the times when I used to say, this is what I used to love to say this. Somebody said, well, you know, let's wait till after the holiday. And I'd be like, what holiday? And I used to appreciate feeling that even with the peaks and valleys of business ownership, every day was a holiday on some level.
Right. No.
That kind of sovereignty that you feel, mm-hmm. the dominion over your own affairs in your life, is unparalleled. Really.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I do think that it can create strains on relationships. If you have somebody that, for example, works for the government and they're, you know, 9 to 5 or mm-hmm. 9 to 4,
right.
whatever that is,
right.
and yet you are working 24/7,
mm-hmm.
that makes a really different kind of interaction. They mm-hmm. want to go do something.
Definitely.
And it's 11 o'clock at night. You're like, hey,
I got to get this done.
I got to get this done.
Whatever. Yep. Yeah. But I think, you know, in the interest of what you just said, Amy, the other thing to keep in mind that I keep in mind since then is how to own a business that doesn't own you.
Yes.
Mm. That's the key now. Like, everybody wants to be able to say they have their own business, and not everybody is really clear, or you don't have any concept of what the demands are going to be until you get into it. And yet now I feel if the business is going to own me, it's not a business. It's just a job that mm-hmm. I've given myself. And if that's what it is, then
that's
it has to be
point.
Tweaked. It has to be tweaked. If
great
it
point.
Owns you, it has to be tweaked.
Great mm-hmm. point.
So when I hear about not entrepreneurs, you can't sleep or you can't. And some, it's never said like this, but it boils down to it. You can't spend time with your family.
I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true either.
No. You can bring your family into the experience. As a matter of fact, I remember seeing a little blurb on work-life balance. Mm-hmm. And then I saw later in the article, a man from India thought that was like such an absurd concept because the way his work worked.
He built it around
It around his family. So
right.
they were together all the time.
Yeah.
And so there wasn't any, like, you know, work-life balance, I feel, exists when you don't like what you do.
I agree. Mm. I remember when my son was little and he was growing up, when I left the corporate world to be an entrepreneur, I got to go to I did not miss one of his football games.
Wow.
Not one.
I remember that. So how old was he when that occurred?
He was 5 mm-hmm. when that occurred.
Wow.
I think people make active choices. It's, you know, some people, just to be honest, you can be entrepreneurship also gives you great excuses to be a little bit lazy. You don't have to take that extra step because you just always have something to do. Especially if your partner is not as involved or you don't come home and explain what's going on and they don't really see the trajectory of where you're going. So you can just kind of say, I'm an entrepreneur. And you don't have to take those extra steps to make sure that either you've built it around your family or that you're building that time in for husband, wife, children, or whatever it is. Even if it's alone time.
You can put it on the business.
Yeah,
yes.
You can put it on the business. Even just for alone time, just to say, today I'm not going to answer my phone or talk to anyone because I need this time for myself.
Okay.
You know, so I think some people, and those are the people who don't get it, as you were talking about earlier, about if the business owns you. So you really have to get it. Just because you work 20 hours a day doesn't mean you're being productive.
Oh, absolutely not. All motion is not progress.
Yep.
Yep. Absolutely.
Great distinction.
Hmm. So, Frank.
Ma'am.
Where you been? Just to let you know, he's like a traveling man. He goes to all these exotic and out-of-the-way places.
That's
while
great.
I'm here
nice.
Slaving away in D.C.
There's nothing exotic about Philly. That's where
what?
I just got back from yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I need to tell you, I know some pretty exotic places in Philly. Maybe we should go together.
You went with the wrong people.
You're not going to take us?
last week, you know, I was flying back on, this was crazy, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I scheduled a gig. You know, so I was flying back on that Wednesday because I wanted to be back, you know, in time for dinner with my family
right,
and all of that.
Right.
From Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Wow.
Coeur d'Alene.
Coeur d'Alene, yes. I never heard of it. Didn't think I'd ever be able to pronounce it.
Did you ever hear of Idaho?
Well, yes, I got that. But I flew into Spokane. It's not Spokane.
So it's not Spokane. It's Spokane. Spokane.
Right, Spokane.
If you're in Idaho, it's Spokane. If you're outside of Idaho, it's Spokane.
Well, it's Spokane, Washington.
Spokane. Oh, got it.
Not Spokane.
Spokane.
You say
okay,
you
gotta got to
drive a half hour
I hear you.
To
okay.
Coeur d'Alene.
Okay.
So that was nice. And then I got to go to Nebraska and Minnesota, St. Cloud coming up. I don't know the dates.
St. Cloud.
Yeah, St. Cloud. You heard of that?
No, but it sounds kind of cool.
Whatever.
Coeur d'Alene sounds somewhat exotic.
Coeur d'Alene was nice.
Was it a city?
It's a city. It's like a resort area where the tourism is what's there.
Is that where all the golf courses are that people, the resorts where people fly from all over the world to go to this place?
I don't know
how much people fly there, but there are golf courses. And I stayed at a resort that was a golf course.
I think this is like the place in the middle of nowhere where they've built these amazing golf courses. Mm. I think I've heard of it.
So I never heard of it.
Are you a golfer? Are you not revealing that aspect of your character?
Not at all.
We don't want to only know one dimension of the infamous Frank Love.
You know,
maybe you just like wearing golf pants.
Nah,
I don't know.
Mercy.
I tell anybody who invites me to a golf event, I'll drive the cart. That's me. I'll drive the cart.
You get into the game, though.
So it's not fun for me. I mean, it's 18 holes.
When's the last time you played?
It's been 10 years.
Play again.
I mean,
give it a shot.
When I did it, it was once I got to the ninth hole, I was gone. My mind was gone.
You were bored.
It's the hardest skill there is to master. I mean, look at these guys who play hours a day and they still get on a course as professionals and they can't do it.
Yeah.
But they want to.
They want to. That's true. And they make a lot of money too.
Yeah, right,
I have an uncle who plays every day. Every day that the
people love it.
Whether you play, Nancy?
I have not played in many, many years. Though I am considering not returning to golf, but archery.
Okay.
I was a former champion at mini golf at Haynes Point.
Is that right? Mini golf, listeners.
Putt, yes. Champion.
My husband was involved actually with the NNGA, which is the National Negro Golf Association.
Wow.
And, you know, as you know, they weren't allowed on white golf courses.
Right.
And
right.
So a lot of the doctors and lawyers and professionals over the years formed this group. And it's still in existence today.
Okay.
Nice. Very nice.
So he plays.
He plays.
Okay. Is that where he is right now?
Not today. It's kind of cold out. But he'd be there if it warmed up about five more degrees.
5-10 degrees, yes.
Okay. Amy, let's get to the good stuff.
All right.
How's a wife feel me? Whoa. All
right. Rewind.
How's a white female feel about the dynamic between black women voting for Clinton? And I don't know if this is true, but I heard it. Black women voted for Clinton. White women voted for Trump. What say you about that?
I think it shows all of us that the sisterhood is a fantasy. That black women have traditionally gotten on board reluctantly and said, okay, we've got a sisterhood here. And have done things that may not have been in their self-interest to do so for the sake of womanhood. And
like
I think,
what?
Well, So I think like voting for Hillary Clinton, where it might not have been the best choice. Well, certainly in this election, I feel it was the best choice. But the example of, you know, women's rights and, you know, kind of pushing the feminist agenda, it looks on the surface that it's about women, but at the end of the day, it's about white women. And I think this election has shown, you know, 94% of black women voted for Hillary Clinton, and 53% of white women voted against their own self-interests for Donald Trump. And to me, they chose white over women.
They chose white over women. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Is that bad? And I don't even... Yeah.
Are you asking me if that's bad?
Yeah.
I think voting against your own self-interest for a racist, misogynistic, xenophobic individual is bad.
Not good.
But
okay. Yeah.
So for me, I would question. For me, I would question whether or not that percentage, whether or not people actually thought it was against their self-interest, right? Because I'm not sure that that percentage of white women actually thought that voting for Trump was against their self-interest. I'm not that politically astute, but.
So I have a theory. Want to hear my theory?
Of course.
Yes.
I think it's the mama bear theory. Let's say, so I have a black son, but let's say I had a white son and I'm watching the browning of America occur. The demographic is absolutely changing. And so I know what happened to black kids and Latino kids and non-white kids. And I saw the discrimination and I saw the bias against them. And I recognize that, you know, that may happen to my child. There's some fear there. So let's say my child was white. Let's say he's 10 years old. I know that it's coming, but this guy is going to stave it off long enough for me to get my kid into a college and my kid a good job before the switch flips.
Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, as a mama, I would say, well, I don't really care about women's rights because I'm going to sacrifice my, you know, my womanhood in many respects to get my white boy a job.
Well, historically, I think that might be accurate because it's not like white women have been treated great by white men.
They've been treated terribly.
You know what I mean? So it's almost as if it's historically accurate that maybe white women are not exactly sure what's in their best interest, and what they think is in their best interest is what's in the best interest of their men. Does that make sense?
I agree. They were saying a few things with their vote. They were, in my opinion, there was the statement that at the end of the day, we're not in the shape we claim we're in, okay? At the end of the day, what's good for my man is good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would at least surmise, not that I've done the research or the homework, that you still have a disproportionate number of white women who are able to stay at home and raise their kids while their husbands work. So it's, even though the number of women earning more money than their husbands or counterparts is on the rise, you still have that traditional dynamic running. Even if she's the breadwinner, oftentimes she will take the role of subservient.
That's
in
what
the
I was
relationship.
Gonna say, or the hope mm-hmm. of a traditional,
absolutely.
Know, what happened to her parents or her grandparents. Absolutely.
She wants that for her children.
Yep. I have a question for you.
Sure.
So as a white woman married to a black man with a black son, what has your experience been through this process with other white women?
Right? Through the process of being married to a black man?
Of being married. So
having
my
children.
Assumption is that you didn't meet one black man and get married, but that you've dated black men or there's always been an interest somewhere. Is that true?
So I would say I was a single mom when my son was born.
Okay.
And my husband is not the biological father of my son.
Okay.
So I was always an equal opportunity employer. It was who I was interested in. If you were white, if you were black, if you were Asian, it didn't really matter. If you were cool and somebody that I had something in common with, we would date.
And you grew up where?
I grew up in Ithaca, New York. You know, it's a really weird place. I grew up in a pretty affluent neighborhood. And in the 60s, I was born. And three doors down was my eye doctor, who was African-American. A few doors down, we had an integrated neighborhood community with highly successful professionals. And so there were probably four or five black families in my neighborhood alone. So it was really different than the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. So I think that some of the things that people, you know, think about in other parts of the country didn't really exist. Although it did, it wasn't as obvious and as in your face as in many other parts of the country. Cornell University was there. It was a really international town. But once my son was born, there was no way I was going to, we came as a package deal, and there was no way I was going to put someone who didn't understand his struggles, who didn't understand how to mentor him in front of him. So at that point, it was almost exclusively black men that I dated.
Hmm. And that was for your son?
For the sake of my son, absolutely.
Okay.
And so that means that you don't think a white male could
mentor.
Yeah, could do that for your son.
Could father your son adequately.
So as a white woman who's looked at this stuff a long time, I still have a whole lot to learn. I still trip all over myself all the time. White privilege is like in my DNA. And I look at it every second of every day and I still make mistakes. It's really hard to find other people who are willing to be uncomfortable, who are willing to, you know, have a firing squad come at them and say, hey, what about this? And be open enough and not defensive enough. And I still get defensive sometimes.
Give us something. Share. Just so we're like overtly clear, white privilege does exist. You're saying that.
Absolutely.
Okay. And that shows up. How is that? What do you do? And what have you seen? And, you know, all of that.
Well, I'll give my own example. Mm-hmm. I have a big contingent on Facebook, and there's about 5,000 of us that talk about these issues all day long and yell at each other.
Yes.
And I'm right out there.
She's out there.
Well, and I make mistakes. There was a woman who took an issue with something that I said. I wanted us to, you know, can't we all get along kind of thing? And a black woman took issue. And rather than listen to what she had to say, I spent a lot of time in that moment, and I know better, going, I'm not one of those people. You don't really understand me. You know, my white fragility came right into play. And it wasn't until we had really gotten into it and I had to stop the conversation and step back and go, ooh, you know, I stepped right all over my white privilege, mea culpa. And I wrote a public apology saying, you know, I was wrong and this is what I did wrong. I'm sorry. I will do better. And in the hopes that the other 4,000 of my folks that are white will say, okay, maybe I don't have to be so defensive. Maybe there is some learning here.
And what do you want black people to know? What is it that black people can do to help to bridge the gap in your estimation?
I don't think black people have to do anything to bridge the gap. I think that the sole responsibility is white people, because we've been the ones that have been doing the oppressing. We've been the ones that have been, you know, stepping all over ourselves. So I don't really think that black folks have to do anything other than just be who they are. And the white folks are the ones that have to do the work, myself included.
It's a good answer.
They've been you've demonized the African American community in America all over the country. So there's a huge percentage of white people that are probably squinting right now, like, what are you talking about?
I think they squint every day when I talk.
I can certainly get that. It's just like, how do you sell 100% responsibility to a community who feels that they are right about that privilege? Mm-hmm.
So I have a family member who voted for Trump.
Okay.
I'm still not able to talk to them yet because I have to rack my brain around it for a minute.
But really?
They are a white male, and they don't get it. And
don't
I've known them
what?
My whole life. They don't think white privilege exists. They don't think that inequality exists.
They don't think inequality exists?
Really? Not in the world that they live in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And because they help young black men, you know, they mentor them through basketball or through, you know, sports or academic or help a family or help a young child, they think that that absolves them of their responsibility to look at their own behavior. And it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Because that stuff is easy, you know, handing to, you know, a charity or, mm-hmm. you know, helping a young man of color. That's an entirely different conversation than looking at my own behavior. And looking at my own behavior is really tough because it isn't easy to say I'm wrong. It isn't easy to say, right. oh, I've done mm-hmm. something to hurt another person inadvertently or on purpose. Right.
right?
But when I think I'm a good person and I have a good heart, I still am taking advantage of white privilege. And so I have a responsibility, if I don't like it, to do something about it, or I'm complicit. And so for him, it's a different conversation.
I was going to ask about your family, right? And if
Beyond
you had to
her
cut
husband
off
and
relationships with family or close friends, or and not always direct, but you know, just you know, being a white woman with a black son and a black husband, not only a black husband but a black husband who's not the father of your black son, if family reunions, Thanksgiving, you know, if you always just kind of feel like everybody's looking at you kind of thing, or has your family and close friends just always, they see it the way you do, or did you have to like really work with them on acceptance, you know what I'm saying?
Before you answer, Amy, I can see Amy not caring, like yeah. being that person.
But if it's your family, you still got to.
You
got to
deal
care,
with it. Yeah, I understand. So she'll be the person that is peacocking through everybody, ignoring, like purposely trying right. to ignore
or flaunting
you. Yes, and
I would say yeah. putting it in their face probably more than ignoring.
Yeah,
so, calling it out.
Yeah. But please, Amy, the floor is yours. It's your
always
life.
Bringing sweet potato pie to dinner, things like that.
Absolutely. Oh so
real sweet potato.
My niece was born, and I gave her a black doll.
Nice.
Wow.
And I dared her parents to say something.
Wow.
Because this
is your brother or your sister's child?
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
What? Well, see, that would
let
matter.
Let them off the hook.
That
it doesn't matter.
That would matter. Interesting.
And I did it on purpose because dolls, like people, come in all shapes and sizes.
Yes.
And why do we think that the only doll for a white child
is a white doll? Well, it's the
How did your niece? Did your niece?
Concept.
She loved the doll. It was awesome.
Wow.
Now, nice. You don't know whether it got home.
Oh, no, it got home.
Okay. She's been to visit to do
check
the survey.
The toy check.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
Something you said about self-interest. I have a difficult time questioning someone's perception of their self-interest. So Frank, I don't feel comfortable saying you're working against your self-interest because I don't know what your self-interests are. It's not even it's
that's true.
I struggle with my own self-interest, trying to figure out what's best for me. Mm-hmm. So it would be hard for me to say what's best for you. I got to defer to you because I want you to defer to me and leave me alone.
Well, I think you're right. I think it's perceived self-interest. It's me looking in mm-hmm. because, as Nancy mentioned, you know, if a white woman's self-interest is to protect her man and his income at all costs, mm-hmm. right? Or her children and their future income at all costs. I'm making a judgment call mm-hmm. that she's voted against a woman, right? Her mm-hmm. womanhood in many respects for the sake of her man. So she might absolutely disagree. Those issues about being a woman are not as important as those issues about taking care of my man. Mm-hmm.
And the cultural construct.
And the cultural
as
construct.
As it exists.
Yes.
You know, I remember hearing someone say, women in America are not being oppressed. Nowhere on the planet Have you ever had an oppressed people not rise up against their oppressor? Women in America are manipulating, controlling in a kind of covert way their oppressor to get what it is that they want from the structure that currently exists. So if, and, you know, I also had to consider that women voting, not voting for Hillary, didn't necessarily mean they weren't voting for women. They weren't voting for that woman. They didn't feel that Hillary wasn't adequately embraced their concerns or their issues or their hopes and dreams.
So it's one thing not to vote for Hillary.
Okay.
It's another thing to pull that trigger for Donald Trump. Donald Trump had identified himself as racist, identified himself as misogynistic.
Yes, he did.
Misogynistic.
Yes, he did.
Identified himself as xenophobic.
The women had identified him as a billionaire.
Right.
Deal yes. with that. So,
but don't you think you're complicit if you ignore that in order to vote for Donald Trump?
They're ignoring it. Listen. Women are ignoring it in their own household.
Yes, they are.
Right. I saw my goddaughter posted a note saying, okay, she lied. They all lie. Vote Hillary, bitches. Excuse me, Frank. So I was just like, wow. I was just like, wow, really? And I thought, you know what? She's telling the truth.
Yep.
You want to not vote Hillary because she lied about her email? What are you lying about?
I have a real issue with the email, the lie. I mean, are you
Come
kidding?
So women,
they've already
women,
said,
mothers of
you
children
have an issue
shouldn't
with,
lie,
with
but their fathers can lie
her to the wall
yes.
for being a woman.
Yeah. For being a woman. And I wondered if even your family member didn't so much vote Hillary versus Trump. He voted male over female.
But, you know, for this particular election, I can't necessarily say that women or men who voted for Hillary was voting for Hillary.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Because if you vote for Hillary, you vote for Bill. Right? For the person who's not that politically astute. Right?
Okay.
And if you vote for Hillary, you're voting for an establishment and you're really voting for the Democratic Party and you're voting for her maybe because she lost 4 years ago and you're voting for her because you don't want Donald Trump to be in office. So I don't know.
The lesser of two evils.
Yeah, I don't know how many people was really like, go Hillary
right.
as opposed to no Trump.
Right.
Right. For white,
right.
white or black when they voted. And for, I think the clear choice was that if you voted for Trump, you were really voting for what he represented. I think that's where you can maybe a little bit clearer because he was so clear about what he represented that if you voted for him, you were clearly saying that either this is okay or I don't, or I just don't have a problem with it.
It's going to serve my self-interest.
Yep.
On some level.
I agree. And just to clarify something that you said, I think, Diallo, that people wanted you to think that if you were voting for Hillary, you were voting for Bill. But Hillary is a powerful woman in her own right.
Definitely.
And we have dumbed that down, again, because I think in this country, the misogyny that exists. So it couldn't be that she was powerful in her own right. She was just going to be the right hand to her
husband. A former
husband.
President, yeah.
Right. But I think it's hard to separate that because it's like, he was president. You know, he was president for two terms, mm-hmm. you know, and he was black. He was the blackest white dude out there. Like, you know what I mean?
So we thought, in
representation. So it's kind of, but I get what you're saying. I mean, and I do recognize that she definitely had her own power. This, you know, what was that Spike Lee movie? The most recent movie, Chirac.
Mm. Yes.
Right? So when I think about Chirac, when I saw Chirac, I thought the movie was okay. But I was like, women, Spike Lee just gave you the solution as a man, right? I mean, and this kind of goes far-fetched. But you guys have the source.
But everybody doesn't know what happened in Chirac. So
Okay. So Chirac, there was this gang violence in Chicago. So the women on both sides of the gangs decided to get together and say, we are not giving up the booty until y'all stop fighting.
Stop fighting, right.
Right. In a sense. And then naturally they show some women who's just like, look, it's not about me not giving up the booty. I need some, you know, I need some of my own potassium. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I need my own vitamins, right? So, but in that, you know, for me as a man, I always kind of feel like, you know, women are extremely powerful. And not just because of that, but being the givers of life. And I just always, having a daughter as well, mom, sisters, and coming from a matriarchal family, it's just always interesting looking at it, because there are things that I may believe that somebody might say is misogynist as well, or things like that. But the whole point about bringing up the movie Chirac is sometimes I feel like there's power that women have that women just haven't figured out how to exercise it yet. And I don't know if that's misogynistic in itself or whatever, but I just feel like there's an immense power in being a woman that once is recognized, I think.
God help the men when we do.
But see, that brings up an interesting kind of angle on it, because I think much of the power women have is just there, and it doesn't need to be recognized. It's softness. Softness doesn't need to be recognized in order to be effective, because it's something in and of itself for it not to be recognized. And in some ways, it's masculine energy that needs to be praised and recognized and told you're doing great and that sort of thing. But there's a whole nother energy that's just there.
In Chinese medicine, we call it yin and yang.
Yin and yang,
okay.
Yeah.
And I guess we can go right into what you do on the acupuncture side. So, well, okay, you got something, Diallo?
No, yeah, I was just going to say, because I think we're talking about women and men, and just your opinion on black women and white women. I don't know. Women would have to tell me is there a difference. So we're talking about the power of women, mm-hmm. right? So the power of black women and the power of white women, is there a difference? Or the things that exist and just kind of how
innately?
Innately. Like, what is your opinion on that, and how do you look at that? Do you look at a black woman as your sister the same way you look at a white woman as your sister? How do you relate?
It's an interesting question. When I think about my closest girlfriends, I would say that they all share similar characteristics. And I would say 50% of them are black and 50% of them are white, but they all have this inner strength, this ability to kind of stand in their own power. So that's attractive to me, and I share that energy with them. I'm not really good with doormats. I'm not really good with women who will, you know, give their power to other people. You know, if you look at a larger group, I would say that black women have had to stand in their own power because of so much that has occurred to them. White women have had things occur to them, and yet it hasn't been as violent. It hasn't been as in your face, so that they've sort of not been able as easily or readily to kind of stand in their own power. I'm making a huge generalization, because there are incredibly fierce women who look like everybody. But I would argue that in the big view, I think that white women have not looked at their own power in quite the same way.
Mm. What do you experience from black women over 22 years, having a black son?
Or husband.
Or husband.
Oh, yeah.
So I would say when I started dating black men, I was way younger.
Tell me about the shade, in other words.
The shade.
So I remember being in a movie theater in New York, and there was a group of black women sitting in front of us, and we had gone to see a movie. This was not my husband, but this was someone I was dating at the time.
Do you remember the movie?
I don't remember the movie. And I was listening to them say, well, what do you think it is? Is it our hair? Do you think it's our skin color? And loud enough, you know, just really right. talking at me. Wow. And I remember at that moment just being mad, mm-hmm. you know, And I got up in the middle of the theater and said, well, maybe it's your attitude. And, you know, I was ready to fight.
That is what the general consent, that's part of the conversation.
Uh-huh.
With black men dating white women is that black women's attitude. That's so funny.
Well, so you have to remember that I was young and stupid and I didn't recognize, and what I was going to say is that I didn't really recognize the struggle. I was just like, hey, I'm here with somebody. But as I've gotten older, I've recognized this is way bigger than just whether or not I'm sitting with John next to me and he happens to be black. That it was a real sort of, you know, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but it was just, it's really difficult for black women. I think, you know, my personal opinion is way more difficult for black women than it is for black men, for a whole, because they have women and they're black. So you've got the two places where, you know, you're getting bombarded. And it looks, because we see it in the news, that black men are the ones that are the target more. But I think the insidiousness of what it takes to be a black woman, and in many women that I've chosen to be friends with and have talked about this, you know, it's just so much deeper.
Mm-hmm. I have a conversation with my wife around the it's hard being a woman conversation. Mm. Not even a black woman. Just hard being a woman. It's hard being a wife. It's hard being a mother. All of that.
It's hard being everybody.
That's kind of the conversation I've had with her. And I mean, that's a version of it. Now, but
I don't think it's hard being a woman.
As an individual or as a collective?
We gotta take care of this person. Yeah, we gotta take care of that person. They nobody takes care of us.
And yet a lot of that is choice. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the rigor that goes into doing those things, into providing care and giving everything to the other. And I'm not going to suggest by any stretch of the imagination that I'm fully qualified to say, I just don't think it's hard being a woman.
Well, your qualifications come into question, I mean, some would say, because you're not married now. And
I don't have any children.
Right.
So
somebody would say,
you don't even represent a significant cross section of the culture, so you can't.
Yeah, but you get shade for those reasons, right?
That's real.
I get shade for being children, yeah, I think
married.
I do get some shade. Well, I get a kind of quirky shade. It's like, well, I should be able to do X and Y and Z because I don't have children or I don't have a husband. So there's this notion that I have carte blanche access to the planet and to resources and this and that because
you don't have
it's me. But I have a family and I certainly am fully involved in my family. Mm-hmm. And so I don't feel at all disconnected from my role or responsibility in that dynamic at all.
Here's my question to the missus, and that's, you do these things, but what do these people do for you? That's one. Mm-hmm. And another is, how would you feel if you didn't do these things?
How would I feel?
I mean, no, to her, or to women who are having that conversation. So, okay, you're so stressed because you've got these kids and you've got a husband and that you care for. But how would you feel about yourself if you didn't care for this husband and these children?
I'm not suggesting that they don't care.
No. That's my question to her.
Okay.
So when you're when she's or and it's not so much her is it's a conversation.
Yes.
Is it really that bad? Because what would be the opposite? What's the opposite? Would you be okay if you didn't do these things?
So it's not what others may, it's not what you think others may expect of you, but what is it that you're expecting of yourself?
Yeah.
That makes you feel this way? Like, have you set this bar so high for yourself as a
wife
and a mother?
And where did the expectations come from?
Exactly.
Sometimes we buy into what we've been told
Absolutely.
A good wife, mother, friend, sister is. Mm-hmm. We haven't made those decisions for ourselves. We haven't done the appropriate self-examination.
That's right. Yeah. Can you stand in the power of your choice?
Right. Mm-hmm. And get power from it.
I personally don't feel like there's anything wrong with the idea of the roles between the genders, mm-hmm. right? And I know it can, you know, yes, I need you to cook. And yes, if I'm cooking,
I need you to eat.
I know. Yeah, I'm
so
choosing
my
to cook.
Is the cook in our family?
Right. I'm choosing to cook, but that's not really my role.
Mm-hmm. According to you.
According to me. It's not really. But I love to cook. Right.
Okay.
You know. So it's, you know, I don't know. We don't
and
have
Amy
enough time
says
to kind of.
My husband loves to cook. I like to do dinner parties, big things, but he cooks the other 350 days out of the year, and he loves it.
Right. Yeah.
And we don't identify gender roles that way.
Mm-hmm. To each his own.
I'm the first to say I love to have a meal prepared for me.
Mm. All day.
That is. I'm not going to say.
Prepared and served.
Prepared
no doubt.
And served.
Yes.
The worst.
Absolutely.
The worst.
And dessert.
So, yeah, I don't. For me to make my plate takes away from the experience. I love to be taken care of.
There you go.
That doesn't mean I don't love taking care of her. You
exactly.
know, it means a lot to me to take her car to the gas station and fill it up and bring it back, and so she don't ever have to go to the gas station.
Mm-hmm.
That's also fulfilling. It's
you get the
many
car
sides
clean.
To it.
In good relationships, you find the balance. I take care of my husband in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What you got, Nancy?
So before this show ends, there are just some generalizations about white women and black men that I would deem ignorant because you kind of know better, but I have an opportunity to actually ask a white woman right here on the radio. So I want to ask some questions. Can I?
Heck yeah.
Okay, so one, there's a saying that says, once you go black, you never go back. True or false?
Well, for me, true, but there were circumstances.
Extenuating circumstances.
That would make that true. I think that once you step over an imaginary line, you kind of find yourself steeped in a culture. And if you become kind of immersed in that culture, it's sometimes you have to go back over another line. And maybe you've gotten comfortable on that side. And you're like, I don't feel like going back over another line to get to another place.
Gotcha. Go ahead. I got a rack up.
I would love to hear. Tell me about black culture from a white female's perspective, from your perspective, because you don't speak for all white females. I get that.
Right.
But I would love to
hear. I don't?
I mean, not for all men. But I would love to hear just some of the characterizations you see in black culture. In fact, on a funny note, Gary Owen,
the
comedian.
Mm-hmm. His wife is black.
Yes, he's got a reality TV show on BET, and he talks about black church versus white church.
Oh
he,
my
you
goodness.
Know, he does all kinds of stuff. And before I even get to it, I've actually watched his show, and I wish his wife would not be in it so much. It's too much of his wife. And not enough him. Like, give me his wife. It's a 30-minute show. Give me the wife for 5 minutes. But she takes up most of the show.
Is that because she's black?
Because she's a black woman who needs an attitude adjustment? Is that what you're saying, Frank?
I'm not saying that. But I am saying, give me more Gary Owen. Put him on the road. I don't want to see his wife so much.
Gotcha.
So I want to answer both questions because I think there are two distinct questions. And the first one that I will say is that I can only tell you what attracts me to culture that, you know, and I'll put in quotations, black culture,
mm-hmm.
right? I love the openness of, you know, communication. I think that very often in white culture, we become very polite. The political correctness is, you know, in play in many of the places that I go that are, again, white.
Mm-hmm.
I also love the idea that black women particularly have a way healthier body image than white women do. You know, the idea of being curvy as a woman is celebrated in black culture and in white culture. It's getting different now, but certainly when I grew up, you know, if you weren't flat as a board, you were not considered attractive. I have some theories about that, but that we won't get into that now. Music, to me, the music that really speaks to my soul usually comes from Black artists. And I'm Jewish, and while I love my religion, the thing that moves me to tears is to be in a Black church and listening to a phenomenal choir. I mean, really moves me. There's something incredibly spiritual about that. Mm-hmm. So in ways that I don't get that in a Jewish synagogue. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that I personally like. But to speak to the generalization of, you know, white women as doormats or white women being able to do things sexually that Black women are not willing to do, or, you know, those kind of stereotypes that occur. I remember when I was dating, there were men that would, Black men that would want to date me. And the first thing that they would say on a date, and I would end it literally in that moment, they would say things like, "I'm so glad to be here." And then they would start to denigrate Black women, like, you know, they just have attitudes and I can't, you know. And I was like, whoa, if you're looking for one of those white women, I'm not the one. And if you're looking for an experiment, I'm not the one. If you have never dated a white woman before, don't be in front of me. And if you've only dated white women, don't be in front of me.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
No,
that's interesting, just because you just automatic, for me, I automatically assume that you might be able to speak from an experience of a circle of white women, right? Just in general. I know when I grew up, it was always like, white girls give it up easy and early.
And I heard that too.
White girls give it up
without any kind of blowback.
Without any kind of blowback, they don't talk back. You know, just some of those
which you still hear today.
These are not old theories. You know, these are not old theories. When you look at, I mean, Black athletes in college, or if you go to a D1 school and you kind of see and hear about some of the things that go on, it's just, you know, I mean, I guess the myths will never get dispelled, but it's just always interesting, because the same way we may look at a white woman and think all of you are the same, white women may look at all Black guys and think they're all the same.
Absolutely.
And it's not always true.
Well, I think the myths are there, and it's, you know, if we don't do something actively to dispel them, we all walk around thinking everybody's a stereotype, and that's what really kills me.
So before we go, what is the core stereotype about white women in relationship with Black men? Like, what is the
Beckys?
Talk about Becky, and what is the stereotypical draw that is just not accurate? Because I don't know any white women personally who are lying down and being a doormat for even their white men. So I can't imagine that they aren't just as vocal in relationships with Black men.
And I don't know.
I think there's always some truth to a stereotype. So we talked earlier in the beginning of the show about how white women want to, you know, generally in this election, wanted to kind of push their white men forward, and that they are taking a back seat. And so I think that when we look at that stereotype, I think that becomes the rule for all white women until you know someone personally. Okay. And so, Nancy, you know people personally, white women who are dating Black men or are married to Black men.
Or they're married to white men, and I just know they're not laying down and taking it
right
lightly.
And it may be who you are in the world. You're just not going to...
Privy.
Well, no, you're not privy, but you're not choosing to be in the presence of women that look like that. And I think that there are Black women who lay down for their men as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that there are women who are strong and powerful inside an equal partnership, and there are women and men who choose not to be. The stereotypes, if we can get past them, we can have real relationships. I've never met a woman, and my poor husband, he has no idea what he got himself into when he married me, because I am definitely not the one to keep my mouth quiet and not give my opinion about anything. So he's had to have a lot of grace and a lot of patience with me.
Good for him.
Interesting. Grace and patience with her.
Dating advice that you give your son. But before we go there, I heard a conversation between two Black men. And One was actually Senegalese. The other was African American. And the Senegalese guy was married to a white female, and they were in the process of getting divorced. And they were negotiating, and they were out talking, and the Senegalese guy was saying that he wanted to make sure that it wasn't perceived as him being abusive or anything like that. Like, he really, really, really had to keep that in mind. And the African-American guy said, one of the things you do is you, when you're talking to her, particularly a white female, you stay in your seat. Never stand up, ever. The last thing you want to do is be standing over a white female, because you can never, even if she's standing up, you can never be perceived as on equal footing. If she wants to say she's the victim, she can say she's the victim, and all hell
and
will be
she's going to win, right?
Yeah. What do you say to that? And what do you say to that in a context that would include your son?
So over the years, it certainly changed. When he was young, I used to say to my girlfriends, I will be damned if I let him date a white woman. And here's a white woman saying that. I was like, I'm raising a strong black man, and he's going to represent the community well and, you know, be powerful. And this is important. And he needs to have someone who has his back. And it's too difficult in many respects. It's incredibly difficult to learn what you need to learn to be a strong partner to a black man as a white woman. There are things I just didn't know because I was white, and I had to learn, and I had to dig and be uncomfortable. So I came into it with my son with that understanding. And so I didn't want him dating white women. And then as he got older, and we would be in, you know, and then he went to a predominantly white university, matter of fact, almost all white. And, you know, he started to date white women and black women. It changed to, you know, my conversations with him now are, make sure that you are evenly yoked. Make sure that they are stronger than they need to be in order to have your back as a black man. Make sure that they're curious. Make sure that they are willing to be open to understanding things that they may not know now.
Word. I don't know. Well, I went to an all-white middle school. The rest of my schooling has been around probably the blackest people on the face of the earth in every way. So, you know, just for me, just the racism, the not just the misconceptions, the generalizations, it's just always really interesting. And I'll just leave it at interesting, because you see things, because you might grow up feeling one way, you know, and then you start meeting nice white people as a black person who didn't grow up around a lot of white people, and you start having experiences with black people that are unfavorable. So, you know, I think as you grow into this, you always kind of eventually start to form your own opinion, adjust and at some point start dealing with people person to person. You know what I mean? You start dealing with people person to person.
So would you say you've socialized your son as a white male, and you've taken the fact that he is also black into consideration?
I've socialized him as a black male. I've moved into entirely black communities. When he was little, we lived in probably an area, the only area in Montgomery County where there were drive-by shootings, you know. So, you know, because
it had to be a black community.
No. Meaning I wanted him, because we lived in Montgomery County. I know you did. And it is kind of funny. But I wanted him to know a community that he could recognize himself. And the school districts that were available in Montgomery County. Now, remember, Montgomery County, we now live in Prince George's County. It's an entirely different thing. Was this one community in Silver Spring.
But, you know, you have to understand, when you say something like that, the only community in Montgomery County with a drive-by shootings.
says, and you wanted him to recognize himself.
Says.
It was the only black community in Montgomery County. Wow.
Right, but could it be the only community in Montgomery County with X number of black churches, with X number of chicken spots?
It wasn't.
But it's just like drive-by shooting.
No, I hear what you're saying.
That's a heck of a thing to tell the realtor.
Well, but I think what I'm speaking to is that it was an area of Montgomery County where they put everybody who didn't fit the white model.
Mm. No, I get it. I get it. But when you hear it, it's
I know,
still it's, like...
It sounds terrible, doesn't it? Yeah, I know.
Onward.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking with National Board Certified Acupuncturist and the president of Whole Health Associates, LLC. She's the mother and wife of African-American males, and she is Amy Lewis. Amy, please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you.
So I have a practice in Silver Spring and a practice in Washington, D.C. on 17th and K. And I do whole healing with acupuncture and Chinese medicine, nutritional counseling. I'm really focused on getting people healthy through using food as medicine and natural ways to heal ourselves and live our best life.
Along today's journey, we've discussed black women voting for Clinton, white women voting for Trump, self-interest, and I certainly got my own twist on that, and interracial marriage shade. Thank you to my co-host, Nancy. Thank you to my guest co-host, Diallo Sumbri. Thanks to my engineer, Jeff Newman. And thank you to my guest, Amy Lewis. You've been great.
Thank you.
Yes.
I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove. On Twitter at Mr. That's MR Frank Love or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, please make sure you like us there. And if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.